This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos. Never held your hand, but of course.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album, Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. They're from Cedro Woolley. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I put this podcast together to inspire you to get out on the trail. Are you putting in 2-mile hikes, 5-mile hikes? Are you sitting on the couch? Have you even gone on a backpacking trip yet? I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. Next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
I go by Barefoot Jake, but Jake Morrison, and I live in Quinault, Washington.
Yeah. Well, and you're primarily hiking over there in the Olympic Peninsula then, huh?
Yeah, obsessively. Probably too obsessively, but yes.
Well, tell me about your blog. I've been following you a little bit online there.
Oh, it's – I kept it – well, when I started, it was just for my family, and then I start getting picked up by different hiking affiliated websites, and so it kind of got an addiction that grew through the years. And it's been 7 years I've been at it now. It's barefootjake.com, and then it's just all like trip reports and gear reviews and stuff. Specifically for the Olympic Mountains here, and then I do a little bit of Utah stuff in the past as well.
Oh, nice. Were you living over there then, or
in Utah?
Yeah.
No, just visiting for hiking.
Nice.
Canyonlands, Arches, just touristy places.
And have you done much in the mainland? The Cascades or anything around there at all? Or
I've done a little bit of day hiking on Rainier. And then I grew up as a teenager in the South Cascades hunting for archery hunting in the Mount St. Helens area, but not in the actual monument, just on the skirts.
Oh, okay.
Like a Packwood region.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know Packwood. Nice. Yeah, they got a nice little pizza spot there I like to go to.
Oh, the in Packwood?
Yeah. I think it's a pizza place. I'm sure, I don't know if it was there when you were hunting, but yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me of when we were hunting, we used to go to this one in Morton, which is near Packwood. And it kind of brought me back to that childhood memory when you brought that up.
Yeah, what's that? Just going there?
Just shoving our face with the food.
Yeah, it's nice when you come off a mountain and you got something like that.
Yeah, my crazy old man used to drag us up there for 2 weeks, wouldn't let us come off the mountain, and we'd just go on elk hunts.
Wow.
And then we'd come off, and we'd be like, food!
Yeah, no kidding. We'd
just be like top ramen and like canned chili and stuff like that.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's different times now. Hey, tell me about your barefoot situation. What's that all about?
It started out just like a nickname through hiking partners, and then I think it was about almost 6 to 7 years ago. I just started like hiking around like the Ho Rainforest and different other places where I just like take my shoes completely off and just walk in the mud and stuff like that. Then I started to like it. So then I looked in and got off the internet a pair of those Five Fingers that everybody has now. And Rangers in the park here would start calling me like Bigfoot and Barefoot, like Mountain Man and all this, because they would see my tracks in the snow. And at the time, they weren't commonplace, so they didn't really know what they were. They were like, what? I was wondering what that was ahead of us on the trail.
Oh, man.
But as I've evolved, and I do different styles of hiking, I need more, some sort of protection for the sharp scree and the rock. So I went to like a thicker, like Huarache sandal or just a hiking sandal.
Yeah.
And that's what I primarily wear now. I very rarely hike like barefoot anymore.
Oh, okay. Is there a certain brand then? Is that Huarache? Is that a brand?
That's just a style. Basically, it's just like a flip-flop, but it has an extra strap that goes over your Achilles, like so then it doesn't make the flip-flop sound.
Oh, yeah, good.
And then they put like a Vibram sole on them. I've wore the ones out of Seattle, Luna sandals.
Yeah, I've heard of that brand before.
Yeah, it's the one of the guys that started it is out of the book Born to Run. He goes by Barefoot Ted.
Yeah, I'm familiar
with that. In that book. And then I also wear the Bedrock sandals, and that they're out of California. Is this pretty much the same design in theory, just a little bit different tweaks and stuff to it?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a good book, man.
I actually never read it.
Yeah.
But everybody tells me, and I guess they made a movie or something, but I never watched that yet either.
Yeah, I don't know if it's out yet. Yeah, it's a good book. You know, I'm not a runner at all. I don't do a whole lot of running, but yeah, I still found it pretty interesting. So.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out sometime.
So what got you into hiking then? Was it the hunting with your dad, or was there something before that or after that that kind of made you want to get out and do hiking?
I'd say like the combination of just loving to be outside, and then before even a teenager, I got the Boy Scouts manual, just like as a gift, and I would just go through that and just do practice all the different like cooking techniques in the fire building techniques, and it's not politically correct probably to a lot, but like trapping different type of snares and stuff like that.
How old were you?
Probably 10, roughly.
That sounds pretty cool, man.
And then through my teenage years was the hunting. And then after that was a huge party phase, which was nothing outdoors. It was a big waste of my life, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then after that, then I started getting to hiking again. So that was kind of like the flow.
Yeah, I kind of had a similar thing. Yeah, you know, I worked in a bar and stuff through my 20s and just – look back thinking, man, the amount of trails I could have gotten through when I wasn't sitting there drinking and doing all that. But
yeah, the amount of money too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, cool. Well, can you remember what your first hike was?
I think my first hike was probably the Lake Angeles, which is near Port Angeles, Washington.
Oh, okay. Is that pretty popular over there?
Yeah, because it's the closest trailhead to the city itself. And then you could pretty much hike it year-round. And it doesn't really have risk of avalanches or anything, so you can get in there in the snow and all that. And that was like a family trip, like kind of like one of those death marches, you know, that you remember as a kid.
Yeah.
Being underprepared for like the summer heat, like no water. Barely any food.
Somebody had a great idea.
My pops.
Yeah, let's go do this.
He's like, oh, let's go.
Man, so how did you expand from there then?
I would say just day hiking in the Cascades and stuff, just at a leisure, and then started getting backpacking a couple times a year just with a family, where we'd do like a base camp type setup in the Cascades, go in, set up camp around a lake, and then just fish and explore the area. But most recently would be just the challenge, like getting into day hiking, and then I got into trail running to get further because I worked all the time. But then I decided I really liked this, so I was like, I want to go out for extended periods and try that. And it just became like an addiction.
Nice.
And it pretty much doesn't end.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that's good, though. Well, like you said, you know, you took all that time off and partying and stuff, and I'm sure that was maybe you didn't look at it that way then, but it's a bit of an addiction, but now you got this instead, so it's probably better.
Yeah, it's a lot healthier, probably for the mind, the body, and all that.
So what kind of distance would you put in then? What's like a big trail run for you?
Oh, the biggest I've ever done was 36, which isn't crazy compared to a lot of people, what they do these days. But for me, that's probably as much as I'll ever do.
Yeah, that's quite a bit, though. I mean, I know what you're saying, though. There's people doing 50 and 100-mile days and stuff, but, yeah, 36 is a lot.
Yeah, it's just really not worth it to me anymore to do that type of mileage because you don't really – and it's a personal challenge, yes. You, like test your body of what it's capable of, but you don't, like, have nothing to show for it later besides for, like, a torturous memory of, like, hammering out that last 15 miles or something.
Yeah, that's a good point. What about what was your scariest point on the trail?
Ever?
Yeah.
I'd probably just say walking up around a real tight bend, sucking wind up some switchbacks, and then there was a bear just a few feet away, both startled at the same time because you're just kind of like tired and kind of out of it. And then you just come around and you're just like too close to a bear. So that kind of sends a jolt of electricity through you.
Wow. So you just came around a corner and there he was, huh?
Yeah. He's feeding on some berries and the wind was kind of up. So you probably couldn't smell me.
Yeah. And who took off first?
He did.
Yeah.
But after that, I was like very alert just because I didn't want to get that close again on accident.
Where were you?
Oh, that was in the Skyline Ridge area, which is above Quinault here.
Is that one of your more favorite trails up there?
Yeah, it's technically the hardest trail in the park, in my opinion, like a maintained trail. And then it was abandoned more. The park abandoned it probably a decade ago, we'll just say. I don't know the exact date. But recently, with all the recent trip reports through the years on the internet, they started maintaining it again because people started like having some trouble out there.
Oh, okay, yeah. So they didn't want to be responsible for that. Might as well keep it up.
So they're like, oh, okay, if this many people are using it now, we're going to have to do something.
Yeah, no kidding.
So wow. Last time I went through there, it was like, whew, it was nice.
Oh, that's good. Do you have any funny stories on the trail?
Let's see. Funny. I don't know. Just being with different friends. Like, I do a lot of partner hiking randomly. Just with random people, either off the internet or just old friends. And I think just like experiencing, because you can do a trail like 20 times, but when you taste someone new, you kind of see it through their eyes.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
And then I have some other like crazy hiking partner stories, but we're not going to put anybody under the bus.
Okay, I understand. We'll
just say that there's very unique people everywhere.
All right. Have you written any blogs about that? Or
kind of hinted to it, but I don't like to bring – I try not to bring any type of that type of negativity, even though it is like a real story and people right. love to hear about that more than anything. When there's any type of drama involved or anything like that, people eat it up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if I'm ever writing something, I always just throw my wife's name in there just to make it funny, and I can always call her out. So what you said you wear like some different style of footwear. So what else do you wear? Do you ever wear shoes?
Let's see. 5 years ago, I took them all and gave the halfway good ones to the Goodwill, and the rest got put into the landfill. And so all I own is a few pairs of those Five Fingers and then a bunch of those sandals, different variations of tread and stuff like that.
Have you been testing them out and trying to find the right one for you then?
Yeah, and it's like every different type of weather condition and stuff has a different, you know, something different you can do with the tread.
Huh. Well, what about socks?
I do the, in the wet conditions, I'll do the merino toe sock, like a liner.
Oh, yeah.
It's mainly because the laces on sandals or any type of that webbing, when your feet get wet, they're more, you know, pliable, get damaged easier. So I wear the liner to protect against hot spots and stuff like that in the rain.
Yeah, like friction.
Mm-hmm. Because it'll cut right through your skin eventually.
Wow.
I guess that's where they invented socks.
Yeah, I guess so. What do you get a lot of comments on the trail ever?
Yeah, people were like, "You're out here in those?" Stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then when I'd wear the toe shoes back, I don't wear them much anymore, but I'd wear them and they'd be like, "Oh, whoa, what are those on your feet?" And stuff like that. But I think it's pretty common from what I hear from other people. Reaction to when you wear those things.
I'm sure.
They call you like gorilla feet and stuff like that.
Well, like you said too, like with the footprint, you know, what it's leaving if you're in mud or something. Mm-hmm. What about the 10 essentials? Do you always carry those?
Yeah, I tweaked my own through the years, as in I'm not leaving things behind, but I simplified it down. So like instead of a bivy sack, if I'm going to do an overnight trip, you know how people would bring like an emergency blanket bivy sack on a day hike or something?
Yeah.
I would leave that at home because I'm going to do an overnight trip, and I protect my sleeping bag and at all costs to keep it dry. So I'm like, I don't really need an emergency blanket if I have my sleeping bag dry.
That's true.
Stuff like that. So I'd say it's per season and per trip, I always tweak it. One thing I did start carrying, and everyone listening should buy no matter what, in my opinion, is an emergency mirror, signal mirror.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's very valuable. The batteries will never die.
Yeah.
So like a spot or like those in-reaches or whatever, you know, you always have to worry about like the battery, or you even wonder like, oh, did anybody actually get this message?
Well, even then, it's still an extra view, you know, makes people easier to see you even if you have your spot on or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can use it for an additional thing like you were just saying, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
And then other than that, I think I use the Esbit cubes for fire starter, because since I live in the rainforest, so it's always wet. Esbit cubes, which is like a lot of the ultralight backpackers use them for their little stoves.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But I just carry them just for a fire starter. They burn for about 20 minutes. It's like a chemical burn, really hot.
Okay, I've heard of what you're talking about, yeah. Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Other than that, it's just pretty traditional on the 10 essentials.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, some people don't carry them, and so it's kind of interesting. You know, I found that most people I've been interviewing do, of course, because we're out there a lot, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's these people out there in their flip-flops. I mean, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you have to wonder about them.
It's got to be kind of funny when people talk about that, because it is kind of a way to kind of joke about it, but you know, you're obviously not in that same ballpark, right?
No, and I've trained myself to do it versus just going out and doing it on a whim, because it takes a lot of muscle. Yet just like going to the gym and doing bench press or something, you gotta like work up to it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I'm not quick to judge though. I actually saw a guy on the trail just this last Saturday, and I didn't even say a word. I, it's kind of funny when people even say something. It's like, well, you know, it's not you. What do you care, you know? Unless the person's limping or, you know, bleeding, like you were saying, you know?
Yeah, it's like if their life is in immediate danger, then it's really nothing you could do.
Right. What about your food on the trail? What do you like as far as day hikes go?
Lots of sugar, even though it's unhealthy. So like, you know, candy bars, Pop-Tarts. I do a lot of, or make like homemade little wraps where I'll do tortilla, peanut butter, honey, cinnamon, and raisins. And sometimes like various nuts, and I'll throw it all in there and just roll it up like a, whatever that's called, like a fruit roll up kind of, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then those are a little bit heavier than your conditional or traditional like a Clif bar or something, but they're so much tastier and better for you, in my opinion.
You are almost like gorping a wrap or something.
Yeah. I forgot about that stuff.
Yeah. What about on overnight hikes then? How do you cook your meals? What do you usually cook?
It depends on the season and the type of trip, I'd say. Like a little shorter, just a chill, like backpacking trip. I like to bring like whole foods now, such as like avocado, wraps. I'll even bring like spinach in the backcountry, cheese. And then breakfast is like oatmeal coffee. And then snacks through the day will just be the same old boring stuff, candy bars and stuff like that. Longer, like extended, like expedition type trips, then it'll be like just all dried, not as tasty stuff. So like powdered mashed potatoes. Let's see what else. Oh, we do a lot of pasta. Oh yeah, we do a good where we just take the instant rice and then we make a coconut curry. That's really good. Cheap, relatively light, and it's very tasty after a long day. And then we'll bring those little tiny bottles that you can get at like ultralight e-commerce stores or like some outdoor stores carry it too. Those little tiny, you know, half ounce bottles.
Or whatever. Oh, like the refillables, yeah.
Yeah, and then we'll put like hot sauce and olive oil, avocado oil in there. And then when we're in the grocery store, or like a fast food joint, we'll grab a bunch of those salt and pepper little tiny packets, you know. And then we'll save those for backpacking. And then we add a ton of salt to everything. Because it's like after you're sweating all day, nothing tastes better than salt.
Salt and sugar.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, I like you. I like the sound of your meals, man. That sounds good. What about your what kind of shelter do you use?
I've kind of transitioned through the years. I started with like a dome tent, you know, traditional. And then I really got tired of a big heavy pack, so I started going like super light. So I'd have like a little tiny tarp and a bivy sack, and I did that for almost 2 years, but then get caught in a few storms and it really sucks.
Yeah.
So I, for the last few years, I used those pyramid tents. I have various sizes and models that I use depending on the trip that I wanted to do. It just has like a center pole, and then you stake it out on all the sides.
Oh, okay.
And then that goes all the way to the ground. So it's four season with all these guy lines and stuff. So I can stay up in the alpine like any weather and I'll be bomber.
Wow. What type of, like, explain, like, what is one of the brands?
One of the brands that I use is called, they're named Locust Gear. They're like a smaller company.
Okay.
They're actually out of Japan, and he all makes it all handmade, either out of silk nylon or a Cuban fiber, which is now, for all the gear nerds, it's called Dyneema Composite Fabrics.
Oh, they that's got right. Out. Yeah, they renamed it.
And then another one that I bought for like family trips. It's just the Go Light Shingalaw 3 that you can't even get anymore.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that one.
It's cheap. It's big. And I think it's really good for families because it comes with the inner nest, the inner tent. So the family doesn't get ate by bugs.
Yeah. Yeah. That one was always highly reviewed. Good reviews too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you couldn't beat it. For a couple $100, you're like four season tent for three people.
Yeah, when they went out of business, that, those were like the first things gone.
Yeah, I remember that. That and their umbrellas are, I think, probably like their best sellers.
That's right. Yeah, I got a bunch of their stuff, though. I even before they went out of business. But then, yeah, I bought a couple more things when stuff was getting low there. I heard a rumor they were trying to get back, maybe reopen again.
Yeah, they're trying to rebrand, but I'm not official on this, but I don't think it's doing very good.
Oh, okay.
Because they're trying to get financial investors.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's not easy.
Nope. Especially when you have a company, you know, that didn't do so hot the first time.
Yep.
But, yes, they really did have good products, though. Like on their basics, like tents, you know, sleeping bags, backpacks.
Well, that was what I heard from a lot of people, too, is they just expand a little bit too far and too many little things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about like a sleeping bag, quilt, inflatable pad?
Nope. A sleeping bag, I went down and got a 0 degree because I sleep kind of colder through the night.
Yeah.
And that will actually range me down to about 20 degrees before I start getting cold. So it's like I'm not your traditional, like, I don't go with the rating of the sleeping bag. And I think it has a lot to do with the climate, you know, in Washington too, in the bad weather. There's a lot of humidity and moisture in the air. So it collapses the loft. The down, even like down jackets and stuff with all the moisture in the air, you'll start out the day and it'll be all fluffy, but then all, you know, it'll start going down, down, down. And I found that my sleeping bags do the same thing through the night, where like at the end of the night, you'll be like chilly.
Okay, yeah.
So I got tired of it. I was like, 0 degree. It's a bit heavier, but toasty.
Yeah, exactly, man. Some things are worth it for sure. Well, what about your pad? Do you have an inflatable or not anything? Or
yeah, I do like a two-step, even in summer. Will be like a EVA, just like it's an EVA mat that rolls out like a bedroll,
yeah,
just foam. And then I'll put a inflatable 3/4 pad on that, which doesn't have any like filling or nothing. It's just like a plain air mattress, and that suits me perfect.
That probably helps out with your heat too, then having double pad.
Yeah, that EVA is great stuff.
Nice
for the insulation. Never tried a quilt. I think I wouldn't like it because of any type of draft comes in, I'm like, brr.
Yeah.
Like when you roll around, you know, at night.
Right. Well, so, but might say, yeah, I don't know, because, yeah, with your heat and everything, yeah, you probably wouldn't like that either.
Yeah, so I was never brave enough to try it, I guess.
Well, what about your stove?
I use several different ones, really, really light ones, but I don't use those much anymore because they're a pain in the butt. I'm lazy. I use like a hybrid now. It's like a ultralight backpacking stove that all folds up into itself, into a pot. But then it also has the it's called the Covia Spider.
Oh, okay.
Covia is a company, and they it's a canister stove, but it's a remote canister stove. So then the hose will actually go, you know, through the windscreen and then into like the ultralight backpacking stove. So it's like a combined system.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And, but with that windscreen being the way it is, it makes it like super efficient.
Huh.
With fuel.
That's important.
So that's nice on long trips. You don't have to carry a bunch of fuel. And then I've also tinkered around with the wood stoves too, the wood fuel burning.
Oh, yeah.
Those are pretty fun. And the kids like it too.
I bet.
Just feeding the sticks into it.
Yeah, are they a little bit heavier?
Not really. They're, I think they'd be lighter than like a jet boil or you know, like an MSR.
Oh, okay.
Because you're not carrying fuel. They have several different designs. Like some of them collapse all the way down to be like, you know, flat, not taking up any space.
Oh, really? Okay.
Like kind of like a deck of cards would.
Yeah.
When you take all the walls apart.
I guess I haven't really seen those. Yeah.
Yeah, if you take around on our website, I have a few reviews of it.
Oh, good. Okay. Different
styles.
Oh, okay. I'll put a link to that then. Good. Yeah. What about your outerwear? Do you have like a typical thing you wear or?
It's just hiking pants in the bottom, and then I do trail running shorts as my boxers, and then a traditional like long sleeve trail running shirt. And then I always layer two fleeces unless I'm going to know that the weather is going to be bomber, because it can get really cold fast, and even in the summer at the elevations around here. So I like to be toasty no matter what. So I'll do like a lightweight fleece and then a heavy fleece on top of that, and then a beanie. And then I'll just do like the I used to do the Tyvek rain jacket that I made, but I do like the dry ducks now. Or frog togs, excuse me.
Oh, you like the frog togs?
Yeah, I can just duct tape them for any damage. And they do pretty good in the rain.
Yeah.
But I also pair that with an umbrella, though, so it's kind of cheating.
What, certain brand? Do you still have the Chrome Dome? Or
they don't make it any – well, technically, for anybody that's not a super gear nerd, I'll kind of tell them. So Golight subcontracted this other company in Europe to make the Chrome Dome for them. So after Golight went under, they started launching in the U.S. more, the manufacturer. And so now several other backpacking companies in the U.S. are now distributing – the same umbrella underneath different names.
Oh, okay. So it's the same one.
So if you look around on the internet, like all these different names, if you just like Google like Chrome hiking umbrella, there'll be like all these different names, but they're the exact same one.
Oh, nice.
The trick of branding.
Yeah. You know, that's honestly something that's been on my list to, you know, just give a shot is an umbrella. I haven't pulled the trigger yet, but
it's a fashion, you know, statement there.
Well, I mean, it seems like, you know, fashion aside, though, it seems like it would work pretty well.
Yeah, we use them even in the summer because it's 15 degrees cooler underneath the Chrome Dome. So you're up like fully exposed, like in the Alpine, no shade. And then you pull that sucker out and it's like, ah.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I've heard of like a lot of desert hiking, you know, Arizona trail type stuff use it, but yeah, I never really heard the degree difference. So it's 15 about roughly.
Yeah, that's what they claim. And then if you Google like, what's the temperature difference in the shade? And it's relatively the same.
Okay. Yeah. That's pretty sweet, man. Yeah. That's not bad at all. Well, you mentioned fires. Do you have fires quite a bit on the trail, or is that just like an emergency thing?
Yeah, I do in the off season, or like if it's halfway questionable. I'm talking about like not in the summer,
right?
When I say off season,
yeah.
I'll go out on the gravel bar. I like to do a lot of gravel bar camping, and so if you have a fire out there, you're not going to burn the forest down because you're so far away from anything flammable.
What is a gravel bar?
A gravel bar is just a term out on the river where the river, when it floods, it eats like away everything and just leaves gravel and rocks.
Yeah, right? Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
You can go out there and camp like anywhere, especially in the Olympus. Some of the valleys in the rainforest, they're like there's no good camp spots unless you like sleeping in like swamps and stuff like that. So you just go out in the gravel bar and it's like being on the beach.
Right. No, that's good. Yeah, I know a lot of people do that. Yeah, but you know, I ran into some this weekend up around Mount Baker. Some people, and yeah, they were doing that up there too. So I don't. They didn't mention whether they had a fire or not, but still, yeah, it makes sense. It's a good spot, and plus, you're right there next to the water anyway. So,
yeah, you get that little, you know, all night roar, helps you sleep.
That's awesome.
And if the bugs are bad too, it's a good place to be, because there's generally a breeze coming from the river.
Yeah, but so you know,
it keeps the mosquitoes away.
That's why you got that zero bang. Yeah. What, if anything, are you afraid of in the woods? You mentioned the bear encounter, but is there anything else that's ever scared you? Or?
I would say just a personal thing is just going somewhere where you cannot turn around. That's the biggest fear now.
Yeah.
So like where you go forward, anybody that listens to this, always keep that a rule in your head. Never put yourself in a situation where you can't turn around, because that's really bad feeling when that happens to you. And other than that, no animals or nothing like that. I do a lot of solo off-trail stuff, even when I was a kid, so I'm kind of used to that part. Like running into wildlife and stuff.
Sure.
But just completely screwing you over, making bad decisions, that's a big fear. So you have to like really pay attention and be smart about your actions.
Yeah. Well, it's always easy to talk about it afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have done that.
Definitely.
Yeah. You mentioned that about not being able to turn around, and, it really made me think of this last year when I was up around Glacier Peak, and it was our last night heading out, but it was a one-way trail. We're on the Pacific Crest Trail, but it was a 50-mile section where there's no feeder trails, no nothing. So the only way out was basically about 40 miles back. And, mm-hmm. We woke up, we were going to hike out 12 miles that day or whatever it was. And, we woke up, it was when, Chelan was on fire. And the winds had changed, and all of a sudden we woke up to smoke everywhere, and we were so scared, man. We thought maybe another fire or it had gotten closer, and so I was like thinking, man, we're gonna have to hike out, like you say, like backs against the wall, you know, only mm-hmm. one way. So yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about there.
Yeah, being in that smoke too is very suffocating.
It's not fun
because you just want air, you know.
Well, we got lucky. I mean, we were able to hike out the problem, but yeah, just having that fear of like what you're talking about, that's not cool.
No.
What about Macy?
Go ahead.
No, you go, man.
Oh, I was going to say, Macy, you respect those firefighters, those guys that do like smoke jumpers and stuff like that. Oh,
man. Yeah.
They have a crazy job.
Have you seen any of those guys up there before?
Not in person, actually. But if you were following the headlines, there's a huge wildfire in the Queets this year, Queets Rainforest, which is the wettest rainforest or part of the lower 48 in the whole U.S.
And it was on fire?
Yep.
Oh, man.
And it burned a lot of it. And it was a lightning that started it, I guess. But they put a lot of the footage, like the guys – the smoke jumpers are jumping out of the planes to get, because it was so remote. And I thought that was just like super hardcore.
Oh, it is, man. I mean,
they're wearing their GoPros, you know?
Oh, okay. It was that kind of footage?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I read a book. I can't think of the title right now, but yeah, it was about smoke jumping in Alaska and Montana and stuff, and or Colorado or something. But yeah, man, it was you know, you just think about that, and they've got all their gear. They usually carry like a Pulaski or a shovel or something, and they're humping, and you know, you talk about heat, man. They're dealing with extreme conditions. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, we kind of chit-chatted with one of a team of them this last summer, because a lot of them were using Quinault and the lodging that's around Quinault as like a base camp.
Oh, while they're fighting the fire there?
Yeah, so one of the nights they flew their little chopper in that they use for the smoke jumping. And that was pretty cool. And then got to talk to them.
That is cool. Yeah, I'm trying to reach out to some people, get them on the show here. We actually know family friends, a few of them. I hang out at Bird's View Brewery. It's in the Concrete area, in between Cedar Woolley and Concrete. Up one of my favorite hangouts, and one of the there's a can't think of their name right now, but anyway, they're not jumpers, but they definitely go in and fight the fires back in the woods. So kind of cool to hear their perspective on things.
Yeah, they probably got some stories.
I'm sure. So what about dogs? Do you guys have a dog? Do you hike with a dog?
No, I have in the past when I was a teenager. My personal belief now is dogs are more responsibility than a child.
Yeah.
So it's just not – I would have to – if I was going to hike with a dog, I'd have to be somewhere where there's like no people, because then I wouldn't have to worry. About like, should I have, you know, because there's on leash rules and stuff, and then that's a whole nother ball game if you don't have like a dog trained properly for a leash. And then you feel bad, and you're like, oh, I gotta take him off the leash, but then they can go run up on somebody. So that, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, and well, you're also dealing with you probably, I would assume, do quite a few hikes that get into the national park there too, right?
Yeah, the majority of them are actually, and they don't allow dogs. When I was in the South Cascades is when I'd have my puppy out there all the time with me.
Yeah, they're pretty the trails are endless of where you could bring the dogs. Mm-hmm. on our side of the mountain. Yeah, what about photography? I imagine with your online presence, you probably do a lot of picture taking. What do you use, a phone, or do you have a big camera?
That kind of evolved through the years. I started just with a cell phone because I was broke. And then I got a GoPro years back. And then I did, you can do still images with the GoPro. So I did that for a while because they have like a unique fisheye look to them. And then I invested in a camera, like a real camera, like about 4 years ago. And then, you know, just lots of practice and stuff like that on composition and all that. And then last year I got like a pro setup. So I invested in another setup on top of that. So it became like an addition, actually. It's my new trail run.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was younger, I'd be like, oh, I want to see how many miles I can do. And now I'm like, I want to get like a really nice image and make it like a goal.
Yeah. Well, plus,
and it's, you know, kind of therapeutic too, you know?
Yeah. And you got to take pictures of your kids too. So, you know, there's yeah, always that excuse too.
The grandparents will never let you or let you hear the end of it then if you don't.
Right. What? So do you find yourself bringing that bigger, newer camera on all the trips now, or do you sometimes just use your
once
GoPro?
In a while I just take a break and I just do like a mental detox where you don't have to worry about taking pictures.
Yeah,
and that's nice, but generally that's somewhere that I've already been a bunch. But yeah, I pack like this summer I packed full tripod, filters, you know, a couple of lenses, adapters, all that, like off trail, like super remote places. And you're like, as you're carrying it, you're like, oh, this is like extra weight.
Yeah.
But then when you get home, you're like, oh, I'm so glad it wasn't through an iPhone.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because you actually can have like something that lasts, like an image, a good image could last like, you know, 100 years, if not more. If it's stored properly.
Yeah. And so do you find yourself printing off a lot of your pictures then?
I have, and I've been published in a magazine and tons of online publications. And then for Christmas 2 years ago, we did like a you know, pick a few of our favorites and then just give them out for gifts and stuff like that. And that worked out well. I need to actually start printing more of them because there's pretty much no, you know, compromise for a good printed framed image versus digital.
Right. Well, if you're taking the quality pictures, then you can certainly do that.
Mm-hmm. And then recently, the Olympic National Park hosted like a social media, perhaps you saw it. It was like a little photo contest.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So that you could be on their the annual pass. And then I don't know, a couple dozen people. They didn't really market, the park didn't really market it that well, so they didn't really get that many people entering as they probably wanted. They just kind of threw it up on Facebook. But anyways, I ended up winning that with one of my images. So if you get the Olympic National Park annual pass for 2016, it'll be my photo on it.
Oh, so everybody already owns your photo.
It comes out in June.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And then they let me know it's going to be the because Olympic – or not Olympic National Park, but the National Park Service is celebrating their centennial this year.
Okay.
For their 100 years. And so it's going to be the 100-year edition. So that's pretty cool.
That's really cool, man. That's a huge smile, man. It's like, you know, that's really cool for yourself. I mean, that's neat.
Yeah, it's kind of like a personal achievement since I have this obsession. It's just like something that you could like look back on later in life, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It justifies your camera too.
I wouldn't go that far.
So what's the picture? What's the picture up?
It's one of the trips that I took in the backcountry here in the park. And then it was at Mount Olympus, but it's from the south east corner that doesn't get photographed as much. It's a place, you can look it up on my website. You just Google Queets Basin. And then you look through there and look for Barefoot Jake on those.
Yeah, I'll put a link on the show notes here.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then all the photos from that trip, including that photo, is in that write-up.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll check that out myself.
But I'm still yet to pay for my camera equipment.
Okay, that's why you're laughing.
That's why I'm like,
Yeah. The pat on the back didn't do it. What about, let's see. Oh, have you ever done any trail work?
Just, I call it commando maintenance. It's probably not the best term, but it's just where you just go out. Anyone can do this at any time. They don't really market it as such for the Forest Service or the Park Service, but anybody can go out at any time and volunteer themselves and do basic trail maintenance. And I actually encourage anybody listening to do so. And it doesn't mean that you have to like do heavy duty, like, you know, pushing dirt around or anything like that, but just throwing branches off the trail or like if there's like a salmon berry sticking out into the trail and there's 100 people that just walked around it, all you have to do is like break it.
Yeah.
And then it's out of the way. So I do just basic brushing and, you know, any type of basic storm damage that fell, I'll just throw it off the trail. And I'll bring a little saw sometimes.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I decided after my hike this last weekend with my kids, I need to start packing a little saw myself because, you know, it's a couple little hacks and, you know, you can really free up a trail.
Yeah, you'll see it. And then, you know, if you hike the trail all the time, you'll notice that, like, all of a sudden another trail starts to form around it. And then you realize how many people just walked around it. And you're like, if I only saw it out the first time,
yeah,
done.
Well, and it's interesting. So you've never been on a crew at all?
No.
Well, so it's cool that you've thought about that though, because you know that's a lot of trail stuff. You know they teach that. You know they teach about you know how trails are being, you know, basically stepped on off the trail to create because of an obstacle or whatever. And so it's kind of cool you kind of come up with that, you know, just in your own thinking. And that's awesome.
Yeah, that's great for anybody that can get out and do it and to be in a team and stuff like that. I don't want to set anybody off from doing that. Saying that, I'm just making that clear. But what I was just trying to encourage is that every hiker can do a bit of maintenance, just, and it only takes like 30 seconds to throw a stick off the trail.
Exactly. Yeah. And, but people wouldn't think about it. They just think, oh, well, I could just step right around that stick. But, mm-hmm. you know, so it's little sticks and, you know, that can ruin a trail eventually. I mean, you know, build up of a whole bunch of stuff and, it's really cool that, you know, you say that, but a lot of people would never think that. So that's why I was saying it's pretty cool that you thought that. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Trekking pole users, too, have kind of an advantage because they can do like a little flick.
Yeah.
With their trekking pole.
Yeah, I've mastered that. Usually I end up hitting my daughter in the leg or something. Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah, so what's your Facebook page called then?
Let's see. It probably the easiest just to go through my website.
Okay, so
and I have a social. If you just go to the subscribe tab, which is actually moved. I just moved. It's at the very bottom in the menu.
Okay, so scroll down
because I can't remember what my Facebook URL is, but it's
Well, if they just search
just Barefoot Jake.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Okay, well, but yeah, but basically, if they go back to the website there and. You have Twitter also, or?
Yeah, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google Plus. Then I have my Smug Mug on there, which is a photographer album. Nice. And then YouTube. I have two YouTube channels.
Wow, and is that all? They're able to find that on your website then?
Mm-hmm. That's okay. The easiest way.
Good. Okay. Yeah, that's real easy. I'll link that too, and then. All right. Did you have anything that you thought of that we kind of went over that you thought, oh, I should have said that?
Not that I can really think of.
Okay.
And if anybody wants a good reading, since you brought it up, but I kind of hem-hawed around it, is the just Google Barefoot Jake Rescue, and it's just a four-page story about a couple of years back. I had to get helicopter rescued on an off-trail trip that I was doing. I got in a lot of trouble. That might be interesting for any listeners.
Okay, without giving too much away, then. Yeah.
What was that?
Oh, without giving out too much away, so you know, kind of lead people to go read it. Then that's good. Yeah, it's a good article. I read it. It's a good read.
Yeah, I put it up just so that others don't make the mistakes that I did. So.
Yeah. Well, hopefully people can learn from that. Any other articles that kind of come to mind or reports that you put up?
No, I just encourage just anybody with their spare time because I have 7 years of content on there.
That's
on
awesome.
My website, so it's like hard to even get into it.
Yeah.
But just like go in there and bookmark something, maybe – share something with your friend on an email or on social media or whatever. And, that's about it.
Yeah, that's good, man.
I can talk to the cats come home about Olympic, but, your show isn't that long.
It's the time of the podcast that we ask our guests some questions. They don't know these questions. They've never heard them before. So let's see what they have to answer. But first let's talk about Cascade Hiker hats. And bumper stickers. Go to CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Check out the hats and bumper stickers. Support the podcast. You can also donate. There's a donate button on each of our show notes. Go there, find pictures of our guests. Now enjoy the rest of the show. What piece of gear do you consider not replaceable? Something after you updated all your gear over the years and stuff and you still carry it? Or maybe it's just something that people look at you and say, what the heck did you bring that up here for?
I'd probably say a good piece of hiking footwear, and that could be anything for anyone. But without like comfortable like footwear that does not hurt your feet or give you like any hot spots, I think that's irreplaceable.
Now, do you try to talk people into this, you know, sandal type footwear, or is that just you just kind of leave it up?
Years back, I kind of like didn't preach at them, but I'd be like, hey, you should check this out. But now that I know people, that they don't really like to be told things, so I kind of let people just do it on their own, and then if they need any help, they would just ask me. I kind of take that approach.
Do you have any stuff on your website about that, though, like stuff that you've written that people can find?
Yeah, if you just go to barefootjake.com, scroll to the very bottom, there's like a little menu there. One's called Footwear, and it's on minimalist footwear. It's like frequently asked questions on the topic.
Oh, okay, good. That's cool. So do you ever take alcohol hiking? Are you a drinker?
I have. I kind of like with my, you know, old age, no. it takes my 2 to 3 days to recover, even if I had like a shot or a beer. I only generally drink like when, for like social, like with a buddy or a friend or something, you know?
Yeah.
I have definitely, you know, around a campfire partaken.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah, the few times that I have has been like base camp hikes, you know, because then you can choose whether to go or not the next day. Yeah, if you're hurting. Do you filter all of your water on the trail?
I haven't before, but now I'm kind of paranoid. So yes, I do now.
Okay.
Just because I've been in the high country and seen what is in the water a lot of the times. Because the elk and the bear will, when it's hot, they'll bed down in the snowfields, even in the summer, way up high. And so they'll be like, you know, feces and stuff on the snow as it's melting. So I'm like, I'm going to filter that.
Yeah, I never really thought about that.
And there's something else that a lot of people don't think of, too. If you go into like a more popular backpacking destinations, it's not the animals you have to worry about. It's got a heavy concentration of humans. So you have to, that's an issue.
How are the backcountry toilets in the Olympics?
They usually are kind of hit or miss. They put them generally in places that get high concentration, and it's just like a hole in the ground. And then they put like, you know, a skeleton over the top of it, like a privy.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times they wait till they're all the way full before they change them. Yeah. So sometimes in the summer, you'd want to pretty much go dig a hole somewhere else.
Do you do that? That's part of your, you know, leave no trace.
If I'm in a high concentration area, I'll actually use the privy and I'll just stomach it, just because I know, like, I'd be like, yeah, if everybody just went on their own, it would be everywhere.
Right.
But if I'm somewhere in the backcountry, like, doesn't get high traffic, definitely I just do my own thing, do a little cat hole and do that method.
Yep. Cool. Do you carry bear spray or a firearm?
No, I don't. I just got that email the other day. Anybody new, I would say, and if you have like a concern, you can just have the bear spray kind of like for like a peace of mind. But I've only had one incident with a bear where it was a problem bear. And that's out of like over 100, you know, easily of bears. A lot of people don't know, but in Olympic in the summer, there's a ton of bear. They all go up high to eat on the berries.
Oh, okay.
So it's not uncommon that you see like a dozen on a trip.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's good you say that, though, because, like, you know, a lot of seasoned hikers would just be like, no, you should never carry that and you should never have a gun and blah, blah. But you're right. I mean, like, you know, if people are feeling like they need it, well, then why not? It's not you. You're not the one carrying it.
So. Yeah, and then if it gets them outside, then they can have some bear spray.
Yeah.
Just make sure you know how to use it properly, because I've seen and heard about some bad stories about people accidentally bumping it or discharging it wrong.
I can only imagine. I'm sure it's pretty powerful too. I mean, geez, yeah, I'll leave it at home. My daughter made me buy some. She's 7, and she said, "Well, we have to carry it when I'm on the trail." And I said, "Well, okay."
Get her like a little mace one or something.
I bought the bear salt or whatever it is.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So when we're out together, I'll carry it. Otherwise, I'll leave it at home. So you mentioned trekking poles. So you're not a trekking pole guy?
Yeah, but I kind of am a hypocrite now this last year.
Okay.
Because I used to talk a lot of trash just within my hiking buddies and stuff, because it throws your posture off so much. And I'm like a pro, like natural posture person. Because people tend to like really lean over on them when they get tired and stuff, especially going up like switchbacks or something. And that's hell on your body, like knees and back and stuff like that. But what I found is like when I do a lot of off trail stuff, I'll bring a single pole, and that really helps going down some, you know, this down or up like steep terrain to have a pole.
You carry a staff or a single pole?
A single pole.
Okay. Yeah. So I've seen those out there too.
Mm-hmm.
But that would seem even more awkward to me. You know?
Yeah, I always wanted one of those traditional alpenstocks, but I need to find someone to make me one.
They're probably out there.
Yeah, we ran into some people that had them, and I talked to the guy. He was an older guy. And I was like, "Where did you get these?" I was like, "I want some." But he didn't take the hint that I was like actually offering that I would pay him if he would make me them, because he made it himself.
Oh, okay.
He made them out of cedar.
Wow.
But they're really cool.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, if I run into anybody, I'll let you know.
For sure.
Yeah, you're right about the posture, though. My chiropractic friend who I hike with sometimes, and he's always giving me a hard time about that. I've been lately not bringing them, but packing them, but not using them as much. But yeah, because he said the same thing, man. Posture is just way off when you're using them.
Yeah, there's actually a really, I don't want to say complicated, but someone kind of has to show you it, proper technique of how to use a trekking pole, because they can be used properly. But there's like a little bit of trial and error to them.
Well, you should start giving a class.
Yeah.
I'll be on the lookout for your new YouTube channel.
You know, maybe like 5 years ago, that would have been worth the time. But now there's so much saturation on the internet, it's like not worth the investment of time.
Yeah, that's true.
You can Google or YouTube everything now. It's like, even when I started blogging, like I was like one of the first Olympic blogs, like they had photos and stuff of the Olympic mountains online. Yeah. And so I'd get like a ton of web traffic just because it was so unique. But now it's like most of my web traffic comes from gear reviews, because there's so many other blogs out there now or websites.
Yeah, it's pretty bottled down. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny you mention that, because when you do try to search something, it some stuff's actually really hard to find, because there's just so much about it that it's like, well, no, I want the good information, you know? So it's kind of hard to find that good stuff sometimes. All right. What about hiking books? Do you read a lot of hiking books, and do you have any to recommend?
Yeah, I just actually published a little blog about this a couple weeks ago.
Oh.
About my recommendations.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, one.
But I'll just shout some out real quick to you also. If you just go to barefootjake.com and kind of scroll down, it should be right up on top page.
Oh, nice.
But the books that I think that anybody that's obsessed with the Olympics should have is the Olympic Mountain Trail Guide, and that has all the trails in Olympic. And it has a lot of the abandoned trails in there.
Oh, nice.
That aren't even on the park map anymore. So that's kind of a nice little resource. And then for people that like to do more like mountaineering or off-trail traverse type stuff, the Olympic Mountain Climber's Guide is very valuable. It has like a lot of the high routes and stuff. Just a little warning on that is a lot of the peaks in the Olympic Mountains haven't been updated since they published it, you know, decades ago. Yeah. And the rock is very dramatic here in the Olympics, so it's constantly changing. So routes constantly change. So you learn the hard way. But just because something says like class two doesn't mean it's class two anymore.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Little disclaimer.
Okay. What about one or two books maybe that aren't trail guides? Maybe they're just...
Just the standard, like, day hiking, you know, Craig Romano's book for day hiking the Olympus.
Okay.
That's good.
But do you read any, like, nonfiction books, like, not necessarily hiking book, like, more like nature books, or maybe somebody went on a hike and you read their book about it, or something like that?
I wish. Okay. I read just a tourist book of Beyond the Trails, which they sell like the visitor centers and stuff here in Olympic.
Oh, okay.
Which is about Herb Christler, which was a videographer, like one of the first videographers in Olympic that did a documentary for Disney back in 1950-something about the Olympic elk. And you can still find that in select library systems. It's a DVD that they have in their archives.
Oh, that's cool.
But it has like really rare footage in it, and it's hard to get a copy of it. So if anybody's bored or ambitious, they can check their local library for that one to see if they have it in their system.
Okay. Well, then any more recommendations, we'll go to barefootjake.com and check that out. That's good for the other books. And if you could choose one person, dead or alive, to hike with, who would you choose?
Dead or alive.
It could be a historical figure or family or something. Maybe the guy in the video.
Oh, there you go. If I... Well, remember I kind of hinted back to the story that I wasn't going to tell anybody's names on about hiking partners?
Okay, yeah.
So if I had a film crew with me, then it would be fun to go on a hike.
With those same people. With the same guy.
Because nobody would ever believe it unless you had the film crew.
Oh, man. That's good. I like that. Okay, last question. Do you listen to any hiking podcasts?
I started listening to yours recently. Self-promotion.
Sweet.
And I'm friends with, I don't know if you ever heard the, it's called the Trail Show.
Oh, yeah.
Colorado. Yeah, I'm friends with a few of them. So I just listen to theirs once in a while. I'm backlogged, though. I've missed the last few episodes of theirs. Other than that, that's about it.
I love the Trail Show. I donate to them monthly. Yeah, that's a good show, man. They put on a fun show. Always have good guests and, you know, good topics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other than that, no, that's about it. I'm more of a YouTube person, I guess, than a podcast person.
Well, do you have any YouTube recommendations, or do you have an article about that or anything?
For hiking.
Other than Barefoot Jake, of course.
Oh, yeah.
That guy's amazing.
I have like one of those complexes where I don't like to hear myself talk.
Oh, okay.
So that probably wouldn't happen.
I think, you know, a lot of people have that. I'm surprised. I don't know. I just always figure, well, I can't stand my voice anyway, so what's the difference? But other people seem to want to talk, so might as well, you know, just go for it.
You have the deep, you know, the bass, and your pronunciation is proper for a good radio voice, so that's good.
Okay. Well, you know, you're not too bad yourself there, sir.
Compliments for everyone.
Well, cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on the Cascade Hiker podcast.
Yeah, one last little plug. I have like 1,500 photos on Instagram. If you just go to BarefootJake1 on Instagram on your phone, flip through there if you're bored.
Some good shots on there.
Yeah, I do like a mix between cell phone shots and like pro photography shots.
Oh, nice.
And a lot of them are like a series. I'll try to like put the same hashtag so that the trip is there in a series. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's good.
So from start to finish, kind of like to tell a little story. So anybody that's bored this winter or rainy day spring, can you go check those out?
That's Barefoot and the number one?
Yeah.
Okay. Not spelled out, but the number.
I had a Barefoot Jake, the original one, but then I deleted it because I was like, Instagram stupid. And then the country singer, Jake Owen, he goes by Barefoot Jake also. So he swooped up my original Barefoot Jake.
You're better off than him, man. You need to talk to
Instagram. I'm still waiting for him to go, hey, you know, how much are we going to buy you out? We need this.
Oh, because you're .com?
Yeah, and then the Twitter also.
Hey, why not? Yeah, you could just switch to the Barefoot one.
Yeah, it would have to be a lot because I have so much time invested.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Even you know, like how much is involved in a trip report. Props out to anybody listening that does trip reports or any type of photography editing, and then a trip report on top of that. It's like very time consuming.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show. Go on back to CascadeHikerPodcast.com and leave me a comment. Tell me what you thought. That's how I know everything's going good, or maybe some things are going bad, but maybe you have some ideas there. And if you have some more questions for any of our guests, leave a comment under their episode and maybe we can get them back on and answer some quick questions there. You can send me an email if you don't want to leave a comment. It's ibighiker@gmail. ibighiker@gmail. Give my Facebook page a like, North Cascade Hiker. Follow me on Twitter @N_CascadeHiking. That's @N_CascadeHiking. I try to give you guys multiple ways to get a hold of me. Give me some comments on the show and maybe some ideas for some guests. Thanks again for listening to the show. Here's a little bit more of that Whiskey Fever track, Tall Grass.
You were sweet like honey on a heartbeat. You were fine like wine in the sunshine. I could feel you coming on strong. Could never be wrong, could never be wrong. See her laying down in the tall grass, playing mandolin.